we will not relent until our relationship with China is grounded in fairness, reciprocity, and respect for our sovereignty.
The U.S. Vice President blasts China for cyber meddling, and it's not likely the last time he'll do so. It's Friday, October 5th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead, Brett Kavanaugh edges closer to the Supreme Court. Efforts to outlaw space weapons get traction, and art for man's best friend. It's all ahead on today's VOA Asia. We'll turn to the battle for the U.S. Supreme Court in just a moment, but our top story first today. The United States is making its most pointed allegations yet that China is targeting the American political system, claiming it is attempting to undermine the administration of President Donald Trump by employing power in more proactive and coercive ways. In a stinging address, Vice President Mike Pence Thursday said that U.S. politicians and the public are demanding a more open, transparent, and fair China.
China should know that the American people and their elected officials in both parties are resolved. As our national security strategy states, we should remember that competition does not always mean hostility, nor does it have to. The president's made clear, we want a constructive relationship with Beijing, where our prosperity and security grow together, not apart. While Beijing has been moving further away from this vision, China's rulers can still change course and return to the spirit of reform and opening that characterize the beginning of this relationship decades ago.
Mr. Pence also made clear that the U.S. Navy has a right to sail anywhere in international waters, despite China's attempts at harassment in the South China Sea. He also said that a senior career member of the U.S. intelligence community recently told him, quote, what the Russians are doing pales in comparison to what the Chinese are doing across this country.
We will not relent until our relationship with China is grounded in fairness, reciprocity, and respect for our sovereignty.
As of airtime, there has been no official response from Beijing. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. The wife of former Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak was charged with 17 offenses Thursday. Afghanistan's government has formally rejected and outlawed a plan advocated by an American businessman to privatize the 17-year-old war in that country. Visitors to New Zealand can be fined $5,000 for refusing to unlock electronic devices. Pakistan's foreign minister has hinted ahead of a visit to Washington at a possible compromise in the case of a doctor jailed after helping the United States kill Osama bin Laden. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more at our website, voanews.com. As VOA Asia continues, we turn now to the story that has gripped Washington and the nation, namely the nomination of Judge Brett Kavanaugh to become the next Associate Justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. His nomination has foundered in several aspects, including allegations of sexual abuse, teenage alcohol abuse, and even lying to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Michael Bowman is VOA Senate correspondent. Michael, thank you so much for being with us. This is a story that is changing, as you know, literally by the half hour, by the minute. Where are we right now?
Doug, we are perhaps one day from the first procedural vote on the full Senate floor for Judge Brett Kavanaugh, basically to start debate. And then Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has indicated that he would like to see a final vote, a final confirmation vote, up or down, sometime Saturday. And in the 100-member Senate, that would mean that there would need to be 51 votes. Right now, there are four undecided senators, one Democrat and three Republicans. But other than that, the Senate seems to be lining up pretty much along partisan lines when it comes to Brett Kavanaugh.
What you're saying suggests to me, but I could be very wrong, that Mitch McConnell is feeling pretty confident that he has the votes. Do you think he does, or do you think this may be, again, just a bluff or feint one way or the other?
Well, I am always hesitant to say what may be on Mitch McConnell's mind. However, the reality is that if just one or two of the undecided Republican senators come out in favor of Brett Kavanaugh, the math improves tremendously. There would need to be two Republican senators to come out against Brett Kavanaugh, assuming that all Democrats came out against Brett Kavanaugh, in order to defeat the nomination, and there's one Democrat who's undecided. So right now, if you look at it from a partisan numbers point of view, the Republicans do have cause for some degree of optimism. However, I will point out that just a little while ago, a Democrat, Heidi Heitkamp, who's running for re-election in a supremely conservative Republican, Trump-loving state, North Dakota, just announced that she is going to vote against Brett Kavanaugh as a matter of conscience. And when you have senators taking what could be politically fatal decisions on a matter like this, one never knows what sort of inspiration that may provide to other undecided senators.
Beyond what happens in this vote, whether he's approved or not, what are your thoughts as to how this may have changed the process, changed the Senate, changed the Supreme Court? Because this has just been, I can't think of anything, another way to say it, this has just been exhausting.
It has for you and me both, and the week is far from over, Doug. Look, I am old enough to remember a judge by the name of Robert Bork, who was nominated by Ronald Reagan and who was defeated with a huge outcry from Democrats. Republicans have never forgotten that, and they've never forgiven Democrats for that. More recently, in 2016, Barack Obama named Merrick Garland as his final Supreme Court pick, and Republicans who controlled the Senate at that point held the seat open for almost an entire year, and Democrats have never forgotten that. There is a concern among legal scholars that as this sort of back-and-forth partisan sniping gets more and more intense when it comes to judicial nominees, that there is a danger that the American public will come to see the judiciary as just another partisan arm of the government, and that the reverence that that the American people have for the judiciary, which is important because the judiciary has no army, it has no police force, mm-hmm. it relies on its credibility with the public. If that is eroded, then there is some concern among legal scholars that that could have a very negative effect for jurisprudence in America. I would not go so far as to say that that has happened yet. It's not for me to declare it, but there are those concerns among legal scholars.
If nothing else, Michael, it's likely that in a few days we will be done with this story at least, and you'll be able to get some rest. Thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Doug.
VOA's Michael Bowman speaking with us. Happening now in Asia, equities in Asia-Pacific were mixed as lingering worries about U.S.-China trade relations dampened the markets. The Hang Seng Index was off 1.2%. Tokyo's Topix eked out a 0.3% gain. And in Sydney, the S&P ASX 200 fared only slightly better, up 0.6. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo will travel to North Korea this weekend to meet with its leader Kim Jong-un for denuclearization talks. The top U.S. diplomat's fourth visit to North Korea this year comes as Washington and Pyongyang are making arrangements for a second summit between their leaders. Analysts say Pompeo faces challenges to set the stage for a substantive second summit. VOA producer Elizabeth Chernoff narrates for Nike Ching at the State Department.
the difference could not be more stark. Just 1 year after blasting North Korean leader Kim Jong-un as, quote, Rocket Man on a suicide mission, U.S. President Donald Trump at this year's United Nations General Assembly speech called Kim, quote, courageous, and just days ago highlighted their chemistry during a recent political rally in West Virginia.
When I did it, and I was really being tough, and so was he, and we would go back and forth, and then we fell in love, okay? No, really. He wrote me beautiful letters, and they're great letters. We fell in love.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, heading to Pyongyang in the coming days, expressed high hopes for the coming meeting with Kim.
I'm optimistic that we'll come away from that with better understandings, deeper progress, and a plan forward, not only for the summit between the two leaders, but for us to continue the efforts to build out a pathway for denuclearization.
North Korea has been asking for an official end to the Korean War, but Washington says Pyongyang must give up its nuclear weapons first. The United States has also resisted calls to relax harsh international sanctions.
The economic sanctions continue to remain in place. The core proposition, the thing which will give us the capacity to deliver denuclearization, isn't changing.
While securing a second summit will not be difficult, ensuring such talks will produce substantive progress toward denuclearization will be challenging, according to analysts.
The question is, what is Kim willing to give up? Is he willing to make big concessions on denuclearization? I think the South Koreans are pushing him to do that. The South wants to make major investments in North Korea. But this all hinges on Kim now. Is Kim willing to make a move? History shows us the North Koreans will only go up to a certain point and then they back off, or they lie, or they cheat.
Pompeo's fourth visit to North Korea comes days after South Korea acknowledged North Korea may have stockpiled as many as 60 nuclear weapons. But Kazianis said the prospect of a second summit could be a source of U.S. leverage. For Nike Ching at the State Department, Elizabeth Cherneff, VOA News.
This news alert from VOA Asia, social media giant Facebook is making itself home in a giant new regional headquarters in Singapore. Facebook now has 260,000 square feet, hosting 1,000 workers with capacity for up to 3,000 workstations. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
And VOA Asia continues. India's Supreme Court Thursday allowed for the first deportations of Rohingya Muslims to Myanmar, also known as Burma, rejecting a defense plea that seven men detained in India for years are refugees and could face reprisals. They were arrested in 2012 for illegal entry and have been held in prison since then. Monique Skidmore is a Myanmar expert, professor, and deputy vice chancellor at the University of Tasmania in Australia. She told VOA's Victor Beatty, the high UN Commissioner for Refugees, said it is illegal under international law to repatriate people to a country where it is unsafe to do so.
There was a petition launched to try and put an injunction by activists in the Indian court, and that has also been rejected. But these are not the Rohingya who most recently came from Rakhine State. The huge numbers that have come into Bangladesh, 700,000 since August last year, these are earlier waves of Rohingya, and these have made their way to India. And clearly, India has become an unwelcoming place for Muslim immigrants.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi's Hindu nationalist government has described the illegal Rohingya immigrants as posing a national security threat. Are they?
These particular individuals have been in jail, so it's a little hard to see how they pose a threat to anybody. It's certainly true that there is a growing anti-Muslim sentiment that Modi's Hindu party has picked up on, and it's likely that we'll continue to see more of these in the next few months in the run-up to the elections.
According to Reuters and three EU officials, the European Union apparently is considering trade sanctions against Myanmar over the Rohingya crisis, potentially stripping the country of tariff-free access to the world's biggest trading bloc.
They are considering it. There is quite a discrepancy of opinion. Nobody wants to hurt the Myanmar economy to such an extent, and the US is with the EU on this. They don't want to damage the economy so that it gives China a much greater hold over the Myanmar economy. And the garment industry is worth about 2 billion euros a year to Myanmar, and the sanctions that they're talking about would impact all goods between Myanmar and the EU. About 1.8 billion euros worth of exports that Myanmar would no longer be able to send to the EU. And because after Suu Kyi was released, the EU gave them a special sanction where they could export goods to the EU duty-free. And so that's going to be removed if this is successful. But there is still some concern that perhaps textiles should be exempted so as not to cripple the Myanmar economy. So still some way to go. And there's also a suggestion that any reimposing of EU sanctions may be delayed by 6 months or staggered in some way.
Monique Skidmore said it appears the condemnation of Myanmar's crackdown, likened to ethnic cleansing, along with diplomatic pressure and targeted sanctions, have failed to change the country's policy toward the Rohingya. She said the kind of broad sanctions imposed when the military completely ran the country is the next logical step, despite the presence of civil administration of de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi. This news alert from VOA Asia. Tiny Chinese spy chips were allegedly embedded onto motherboards that were sold to companies in the U.S., including Amazon and Apple, according to a report from Bloomberg. Bloomberg claims the chips were independently discovered by Apple and Amazon in 2015. Both firms deny the report. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. Now on VOA Asia, at an upcoming UN disarmament conference, the United States is vowing to push back against Russian and Chinese threats against the peaceful use of outer space. The UN General Assembly First Committee on Disarmament and International Security opens Monday in New York and is scheduled to run 5 weeks. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Ambassador Robert Wood is the U.S. permanent representative to the Conference on Disarmament in Geneva. He lays out some of Washington's main priorities in advance of the U.N. Disarmament and Security meeting. He says the U.S. delegation plans to actively push against issues that go against U.S. and allied security interests. Foremost among these, he says, is the U.S. determination to counter Russian and Chinese outer space and cyber threats. He says the U.S. dismisses claims that activities by Moscow and Beijing are aimed at preventing the militarization of outer space.
What they want to do is to limit the United States' ability to operate in space by, in essence, going forward with an initiative that allows them to be able to attack satellites and other peaceful space vehicles through the use of anti-satellite weapons.
In 2014, the Russian and Chinese governments submitted a new version of a draft treaty on the prevention of the placement of weapons in outer space treaty. When they introduced the draft treaty, they said, quote, "We consider a legally binding ban on placement of weapons in outer space as one of the most important instruments of strengthening global stability and equal and indivisible security for all," unquote. Ambassador Wood, during his press conference, said the proposed treaty was not verifiable and does not deal with the fundamental issue, which is banning anti-satellite weapons. Terrestrial-based anti-satellite weapons. The treaty does not cover that subject. He says that is one of the major threats to the peaceful use of outer space.
When we ask the Russians and the Chinese, why don't you take on this issue in full, they kind of fudge and don't really address the issue.
Wood says the second priority is to uphold the norm against chemical weapons use. Over the past year, he notes, Russia has worked to discredit the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. The main function of the OPCW is to ensure the implementation of the Chemical Weapons Convention.
You've seen many public statements by Russian officials dismissing independent analyses, independent investigations, the work of the OPCW with regard to serious chemical weapons use. So this, first and foremost, is a major challenge, trying to counter this very, very strong Russian propaganda effort.
Wood says the U.S. and its allies have to push back against Russian claims that Syria never used chemical weapons. He says both Syria and Russia must be held accountable for these crimes. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Los Angeles is hosting an unusual art exhibit for an unusual crowd, dogs. Their four-legged art lovers can not only touch some of the art on display, they can also sniff it, play with it, and taste it. For VOA, Angelina Bogdasarian gives us a look.
For two-year-old Peaches, who is used to spending her afternoons at the beach or in the park, this outing is quite unusual and enlightening. She has never been to an art exhibition before, let alone one made specifically for dogs. All the pieces presented here were created just for Pooches.
I think she loves it. She would love it better if there was more food.
The exhibition, called Dogumenta, is a curated art show that features a variety of objects that appeal to canines.
Pups, like humans, each have different taste in art. Some pups like work that's more sculptural. Some pups like work that they can maybe take a bite out of. Some pups like work that they can just pose in front of and just, you know, be themselves.
Exhibition curator Jessica Dawson is certain that dogs of any breed can appreciate art. But not all the works here are just for looking at and admiring. Some objects are meant to be sniffed and investigated.
This post below is actually imported from a farm on the East Coast. It was created by pigs. And so the pigs have rubbed up against this wooden beam, and now the artist is actually attempting an interspecies kind of art experiment and communication. It's redolent with pig smell, and so when the pups go up to it, they're actually getting a message from pigs.
And this showpiece grabs the attention of both dogs and humans.
What she's done is actually go into the No-Kill LA shelter and taken paw prints of pups who are looking for homes. She's also met some of the pups who did find homes and took their paw prints and as well those of their new human owners, and she's installed them here on this gate.
Anyone accompanied by a dog can enter the exhibition for free. And though the four-legged art lovers refused to comment on camera,
you like it?
They all seemed quite happy. Apparently, a dog's life in Los Angeles is not a bad one.
There you go. Good boy.
For Angelina Bogdasarian in Los Angeles, California, I'm Anna Rice, VOA News.
Oh, Peaches. Well, finally, the mystery appears to be over. For nearly 2 months, China's biggest movie star, Fan Bingbing, disappeared from public view. No pictures, no calls, no social media, just silence. Well, she's resurfaced now, at least on social media, and she's in trouble. Chinese authorities have ordered her to pay $60 million in back taxes and $70 million in fines, totaling $130 million U.S. In a message to her 63 million followers on Weibo, she said she owed her gratitude to the government for its role in propping up the entertainment industry. Tax authorities said this week they would not formally pursue Fan for criminal responsibility as long as she pays her dues. Well, that's VOA Asia for today and this week. Thank you so much for being with us for a very busy week. We will be back again with you on Monday. We hope you will as well, and we'll see you then. Have a great weekend.